It's July the 11th, and we are starting our second in a three-part series on a day in the life of the Beis HaMikdash. I realize not everybody was here at the first session. Do not worry. This will be a continuation, but you do not have to have the information that we started with last time. Now, we started with a general overview last time, and we were in the middle. We want to start from morning, but we had to discuss what happens overnight in the Beis HaMikdash in order to get up to the morning. We haven't actually hit daylight yet, so we're still at the very crack of dawn. The Kohanim, as we mentioned last time, are in the Beis HaMokeid. The Beis HaMokeid is down over here. In your handout, you have it as well. It's down in this place. You don't have the green dot. But that's where the Kohanim are sleeping, the ones who are on duty, that's where they're sleeping. And they are now about to start the day's work. The first thing that they're going to do, the first thing that Kohanim do in the Beis HaMikdash in the morning is Trumas HaDeshen. What is Trumas HaDeshen? Deshen means ashes. Truma, as you know, truma is to remove something like we do with grain, to take a truma, take an amount off. It's not really a tithe. A tithe means a tenth. That's miser. But to take some amount off is called truma. Truma sadeshen means that since the mizbeach, since on the altar, there are a bunch of ashes because different parts of the animals that were slaughtered the previous day were burned overnight. So on the mizbeach, on the altar, which is right over here, there's like a circle in the middle. There's a bunch of ashes. There's a mitzvah in the Torah that in the morning, a kohen, doesn't say which kohen, a kohen, should go to the top of the mizbeach, go to the top of the altar, take a small shovel, and take some of the ashes off of the mizbeach, go down the ramp, and deposit them in a specific place, and I'll show you where in a moment. That's the mitzvah of Trumas HaDeshen. That's the first thing Kohanim do in the morning. Question is, which Kohen? That's only one Kohen gets to do that mitzvah. There's other things that go on which require a lot of Kohanim, and you don't need to say this one or that one. They can all do it. But this mitzvah can only be done by one Kohen. So who gets to do it? So they used a lottery system. And there were four lotteries that took place in the Beis HaMikdash every day. Four different lotteries, and I'll tell you how the lotteries were done and what they were for. But we'll start with this one. The other three were done later on in the day, later on in the morning. Now before we discuss the specifics of how it was done, when was it done? What time is it when this is going on? So the Mishnah tells us that it wasn't specific. It was done very, very early. Very early. The Mishnah says it was around the time of the call of the rooster, which is before daybreak. We don't live on farms anymore, but that's really, really early. It's around what we would call false dawn, which is more than an hour before dawn. And there was the Kohen who was in charge of running the show in the Beis HaMikdash, not the Kohen Gadol, but they were, just like we have in Shul, we have Gabayim who run the show, they make sure the Torah is rolled to the right place, and they call people up, etc. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. When we show up on Shabbos for services, there's a lot that has already been taking place, who takes care of the lights, who takes care of the seating, there's a lot going on. So the Beis HaMikdash also had a couple of Kohanim, who were just making sure things were set up for the day's work. So the Memunah, the person who was in charge, came to this chamber, this Beis HaMokeid, where the Kohanim who were on duty were sleeping, and he came around the time of the rooster's call. Any Kohen who wanted to do the Trumas HaDeshen had to be ready and dressed to go when he showed up. So that means the Kohen had to already be up. He already had to go to the mikvah. As we mentioned last time, any time you enter the Beis HaMikdash, whether you're Tahar or not, makes no difference. You always have to go to the mikvah again before you enter the Beis HaMikdash. So even though these Kohanim worked already and they're ready to go, they have to go to the mikvah again. So they wake up, they have to go to the mikvah, and they've got to be dressed in their Kohen clothing ready to go when the person in charge knocks on the door. And that, those Kohanim are the ones who can participate in this lottery. Now let's stop for a moment as an aside. What did the Kohanim wear? So many of you are probably familiar with the fact that a regular Kohen had 4 garments, the Kohen Gadol had 8 garments. We're not going to talk about the Kohen Gadol right now. The regular Kohen, 4 garments, and those are the only things he could wear. A Kohen can only wear that which the Torah says he can wear when he's doing the service in the Beis HaMikdash. The 4 garments are pants, a tunic. The tunic is neck to ankle, all the way down. A belt, which closes the tunic, and a hat. That's it. So what's missing? What we would normally wear? No shoes, no socks. He's barefoot. Hands have to be also, nothing on his hands. And what's that? No, that's a good question. What about tzitzis? That's a good question. What's that? No, it was not these garments were not made out of techeles. No.
What?
No.
And they were all linen.
They were all linen. Except for there's a question about the belt, what the belt was made out of. The other 3 were all linen. The belt, it's a machlokas, it's a dispute what it was made out of. They would only have to have tzitzis if they had a 4-cornered garment. So if they're not wearing a 4-cornered garment, they don't have to wear tzitzis. So that's the question. I don't know what happens with that tunic when it comes to tzitzis. It's a good question. Yeah.
How many Kohanim are we talking about?
So it depended on what time frame we're talking about. Obviously, when Aaron became the Kohen, he only had a few sons. That was it. But as time went on, more and more Kohanim were born, and the class became bigger. And then it was, as we mentioned last time, was divided up into 24 different family units, and they each took a week. It was a 24-week cycle. The Kohen could only wear those 4 garments and nothing else. So in addition to being barefoot, and the hands, of course, have no gloves on the hands, has to be nothing else on, it also means that if it was cold, couldn't wear a sweater, couldn't wear a coat. I mean, this was it. The Kohen could only wear these 4 garments, and that was it. And that's the way they did the service in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Kohanim who wanted to do the Trumas HaDeshen had to be prepared when he knocked on the door. So not every Kohen did it. The Gemara tells us that a hallmark of Kohanim is that they are zrizim. They are quick to do mitzvos. They don't sleep late. They're constantly ready to move and do a mitzvah. So the Kohanim, they're known for that. And there may have been many who were interested, but it wasn't all the Kohanim who were on duty who were already up and ready to go with their makeup on when the Mamuna knocked on the door. So when he did, though, then they would do this lottery. Now, how did the lottery work? This was a smaller scale because it was just a few of the Kohanim. Later on, for the other 3 lotteries, it's going to be with all the Kohanim who are on duty, and that's going to be a much bigger production. But the way it worked essentially was the Kohanim would form a circle, and they would all put one finger out into the circle. One finger. The Mishnah says if they have trouble holding one finger out, let's say an older Kohen, and they can't just put out one finger, then they put out 2 fingers. They put their finger or 2 fingers into the middle of the circle, and the person in charge has one of the Kohanim take off his hat. So he's going to be the starting Kohen. And then the Kohen who's in charge thinks of a number, a high number, much higher than the Kohanim who are there, and then they start to count, starting from the person with the hat, and they go around and around with the number. So he thinks of a number 106, and then he starts to count around all the Kohanim, and wherever number 106 comes out, that's the person who gets to do the service. Obviously, the person in charge should not first count the Kohanim and then think of a number, right? That wouldn't be fair. So he doesn't do that. He just thinks of a number, and then they start going around like that. This process, interestingly, couldn't be done in the Azara, in the actual part of the Beis HaMikdash. The Azara is the area that is that is the sanctified area where the service is done in the Beis HaMikdash. This could not be done there for two reasons. It could not be done there. One reason is that if you're standing in a circle, that means several of the Kohanim are going to have their backs to the sanctuary. And even though when you're doing the service, you can't always be facing the sanctuary, but you need to think about it and not to remain with your back to the sanctuary on a regular basis while doing service in the Beis HaMikdash. So this process, which required everybody to stand in a circle, necessarily people are going to have their backs to the sanctuary. The other reason why it could not be done in the main area of work is because the Kohen had to take off his hat. Now we think about that as, well, one second, I mean, how can a man take off his yarmulke, right? So, okay, but that's not really the issue over here, even though, yes, a man should always have his head covered, but here it's even worse than that, because over here, the Kohanim had to wear the four garments when they are doing the service, when they're in the Beis HaMikdash. So they're not allowed to take off their hats. They have to wear their hat when they're in the Beis HaMikdash. All four garments, they couldn't wear any more garments, but they couldn't wear any fewer garments either. They had to have these four garments on. So you can't have one of the Kohanim take off his hat deliberately in the Beis HaMikdash. So the lottery had to be done outside. So it was done in this chamber here. That's where the first lottery was done. The other three are going to be done someplace else, as we'll show as we move along. So the first lottery was done in the chamber before entering the actual Beis HaMikdash. The chamber, as if you look carefully on your handout, you notice it juts into the actual Beis HaMikdash. The darker colored blocks are the wall. It was a very thick wall. The chamber was built into the wall, and it actually jutted into the Beis HaMikdash. The part that jutted into the Beis HaMikdash was considered sanctified. And therefore, they could not do the lottery in that part. It had to be done in the directions here are the northern part, the bottom of the picture. It's actually, yeah, I mean, this is the way it is. This is west, this is north. It's the opposite of what you would expect. In fact, maybe I'll turn it over just so that it'll be more aligned to what we're used to. Okay. So that way is west, that way is east, south, north. So in this chamber, the northern part of the chamber was not sanctified. And that's where they would sleep, and that's where the lottery was done. The southern part of the chamber is sanctified, and they could not do the lottery there, and they could not sleep there either. So they did this lottery, and one Kohen got the nod. He got the job. So he took the key. There were several keys. This is the first key we're going to be dealing with. Remember, everything was locked. We talked about last week. Everything was locked up at night. So he takes the key. I forgot to mention that where did this person in charge come from at the time of the calling of the rooster? He came from outside the Beis HaMikdash. This chamber has two entrances. One coming from the north, which is coming from outside the Beis HaMikdash, and one on the south, which goes into the main area of the Beis HaMikdash. The Memuna, the person in charge, came from the north, from his house, wherever he slept, and he came to the outside door. He knocked on the door. They unlocked it for him and let him in from the inside. But now there's a locked door between them and the actual Beis HaMikdash itself. So the person who got the nod, he takes the key and opens the door to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, it's only into the Azara, which is the working area of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not into the sanctuary, not into the Kodesh or Kodesh HaKadosh. And you'll notice here in our model that, as I mentioned last time, the sanctuary is a building and it's roofed. The working area is not roofed. It's a working area, but it's not roofed. So the key would get them into the working area, but it would not get them into the sanctuary yet. Later on, we'll talk about the key going into the sanctuary. That was a much more complicated system.
The guy that comes to knock on the door, is he a Kohen?
He's a Kohen.
Apparently, that week and he's not sleeping
there? He is a Kohen. I don't know if he's only from that family, or if he works the whole year.
Does he have to come dressed and prepared?
Yeah.
He's not coming all the way in?
Yeah. You know, he's gonna go in too.
Okay.
So he's got to be prepared as well. Now, he may have been working all year round. It seems to me that you want to have a couple of people who are working all year round, because the ones who are coming once every 24 weeks, they may have been well schooled, but if you're not used to the system, you're going to make mistakes. Okay. So they now enter the working area, the Azara. It's dark. It's dark. It's still before daybreak. It's dark. So they have torches so they can see. And the first thing they do is they inspect the whole outer area of the Beis HaMikdash. Not the building, not the sanctuary, not the Kodesh, but they do inspect the whole Azara. And the way they do this is they split into two groups. And I'm going to take this off so we can see it more carefully. They now circle the perimeter of the Azara. They remain on the perimeter and go all the way around. One group goes to the right, which you're standing over here. So one group is to the right, which is to the west. One group goes to the left, which is to the east. And they begin to circle the perimeter of the Beis HaMikdash to make sure that everything is in place properly, which it would be surprising if it wasn't, because there were guards posted all night. Nevertheless, this continues the process, as we talked about last week, of guarding the Beis HaMikdash. And they would circle the whole thing. So, they would now, one group goes first to the west, then to the south, then along here towards the east. The other group first goes to the east, and then to the south. They're going to meet in this room right here, which is letter Kaf Aleph in your handout. This is the room they're going to meet in. Let me hold it up. They're going to meet right here. Again, I apologize. Last year we had a much larger blow-up of this, and I couldn't find it this year. But this is where they're going to meet. Which means the people who went to the left, to the east, have a shorter distance to go. Those who went to the right, to the west, have much more space to cover before they end up at this chamber over here. So the ones who went east, they get there first, and then they wait for the other ones to come around the other side. They meet at that chamber, and they ask each other, Shalom, is everything good? Hakol Shalom, everything is fine. Nothing's been touched. Everything is the way it should be. Once they have ascertained that everything is the way it should be, now we're ready to get the day started. Yeah.
Why do they need a group? Why not just one sentry, one
call? You could, except they're all going to start working now. That's why they all go. You're right. You could just have two people go around. But there's now all the Kohanim are getting ready to start their day. The place is starting to get moving. So people are coming in. Before anything else happens, why do they meet at this room? Because there are Kohanim who need now to prepare the Chavitin. What is the Chavitin? The Chavitin is the daily offering of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol had to offer a Karban Mincha. Mincha is a meal offering, a flour offering, F-L-O-U-R, offering, that was brought twice a day. Every day. And it had to be prepared because the mincha offerings, the flour offerings, there were different types. Some were baked, like bread. Some were fried. They were done in different ways. Some were boiled. The Kohen Gadol's had to be boiled. Well, if you boil, you need... Well, it was boiled in water. So you need hot water. The oil was added as well. But you need hot water. So they needed to heat up water for the purpose of making the chavitin for the Kohen Gadol. So since that was going to be one of the first things done, therefore it had to be started early. So they get to this chamber over here, and they get those who are appointed to prepare the chavitin. They say, okay, time to start moving. Time to start going. So it would be like going to the kitchen and getting breakfast ready. So they were, right? No one's awake yet. Everybody's still, you know, just getting out of bed. But whoever is the cook has to get breakfast ready. So no one's going to eat this. This is actually going to be burned on the mizbeah. But they get the people ready, getting moving to get the chavitin going. Yeah. No egg. No egg. There was only flour, oil, and water. As we'll see. I don't know if we'll have a chance to go through each carbon. What's that? They were done differently. They were done differently. One thing that we have to be aware of, which is hard to keep in mind, it's confusing to everybody, because the Torah regularly uses the word lechem, which means bread. However, the Torah doesn't mean bread like we think of bread. The Beis HaMikdash was Pesach all year round. The flour offerings were always matzah. They were never chametz, except for two times. There's only two times that a flour offering, that any time, there's only two times you could bring chametz into the Beis HaMikdash. One was on Shavuos, the special Shtei HaLechem, the two breads that were brought on Shavuos. That was made out of chametz and not matzah. And the other time is an individual who brings a karban todah, who brings a Thanksgiving offering. That offering includes 40 different, they call them loaves of, I don't want to say bread, loaves of something baked. 30 of them were matzah, but 10 were chametz. Those are the only two times that you could bring chametz into the Beis HaMikdash. Other than that, it's Pesach all year round.
So the thing with
the 12 loaves was matzah? That was matzah. The lechem hapanim, the showbread, was matzah. It's not bread. We call it bread. But it was matzah. Now, their matzah didn't look like our matzah. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't stripes, and it wasn't whatever it is, shots or matzah. It wasn't the hard and crumbly stuff. Let me digress just for a moment here to get this clear. Matzah that we eat on Pesach, we always get the hard and crumbly matzah, because we are concerned that if we make any other kind of matzah, we might do it incorrectly and it will turn into chametz. We don't know how to make matzah that is thicker and fluffier than what we serve on Pesach. There are Svardim today who still make the old kind of matzah, which is a thicker type of, I don't want to say bread, but it's a thicker type of item. It's not so hard and crumbly, it's softer. It's more like a pita. Now, make no mistake, pita bread is chametz. It is chametz. However, you can make it in a way where halachically it will fit the parameters of matzah. Again, Ashkenazim don't do it, even most Sephardim don't do it, because we're concerned we don't know how to do it properly. But theoretically, it can be done. In the Beis HaMikdash, that's the way it was done. It wasn't hard and crumbly. It was a thicker type of baked item that still fit the parameters of matzah. And that's what it was. These chavitin, even though they're being boiled, whatever it was always matzah. So this is where they are. The group of Kohanim who have gotten up early, who are getting the place moving, they are here. It's still pitch black. They're holding torches. It's very dark. So now, the one Kohen who won the lottery is going to go and do the first real service of the Beis HaMikdash, which, as I said, is the Trumas HaDeshen, where he's going to take some ashes off of the altar. This Kohen now goes by himself and enters the main area of service. So everybody's only hanging around the perimeter. And now he's the first one who's going to venture into the main area. I would think it's kind of spooky. It's dark. No one else is going in there. And you're going alone. And you know it's a very holy place. So me, I think I'd be a little spooked out. But this is what they do. So the Kohen goes by himself. And now he doesn't take a torch with him, because he needs his hands. He needs to be able to do the service. He needs to have his hands free. So how does he see where he's going? So there is a light that is burning. Where is that light? We have a ner tamid in the shul. So where is there a light burning in the Beis HaMikdash? Last week we mentioned there are two lights that are burning constantly in the Beis HaMikdash. What's that? Okay, the menorah is one, but the menorah is inside the building. The menorah is in there. So the menorah is not going to help him. He's not going to be able to see anything with the menorah. Okay, there's a constant fire on the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach, the altar, was a very large surface. You might think of an altar as like a small thing where you burn things on top of it. The altar was, it had a ramp to go up, and it was a very large surface on top of the altar. The how wide was it on the top? It was 24 amos by 24 amos. An ama is between a foot and a half and 2 feet. So the top of the altar was between 36 feet. The smallest size would be 36 feet by 36 feet. That would be the, if we're taking the smallest estimation of what an ama is. If we take the largest, it's 48 feet by 48 feet. So we're talking around 40 feet by 40 feet. That's a pretty large area. I don't know how big this room is, but I think it rivals that. I mean, 40 by 40 is a pretty large area. So the top of the Mizbeach had a lot of room on it. On the top of the Mizbeach, there were more than one fire. There was the main fire, which at this point has burned out. That's where all the limbs of the animals that had to be burned were burned. It's all burned already. And that's where he's going to take the ashes from. But there is another smaller fire, which was there for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah that it says in the Torah of lo sichbet. It shall never be extinguished. That the fire on top of the altar must remain burning all the time. So there was a smaller fire, which was constantly fed, and they made sure before they went to sleep to feed that fire, that it should burn all night. And that fire gave off a light, and the Kohen was able to see to get to where he has to go. Because you'll see, he's going to stay within the proximity of the altar right now. So, he now moves from this room towards the altar. What's the first thing he has to do before he does anything? He's now about to perform a service. What does a Kohen have to do before he performs any service? Wash his hands and feet. The kiyar, the basin of water, now has to be used for the Kohen to wash his hands and feet. He's gone to the mikveh, and he's dressed in the right clothing, but now that he's going to perform a service, he has to wash his hands and feet. Where is the kiyar? The kiyar is to the west of the ramp. And in our picture, it's over here. I'll hold it up on this also. It's a very small print, but it's letter Nun Beis, if you can read it. But there is where the kiyar is. That's the basin of water. Now, let's stop here and discuss this basin for a moment. They didn't have running water. There was a stream, actually, that ran through the Beis HaMikdash, but there was no running water. So, what was this basin filled with? Where did they get the water from? They had to draw the water and fill this basin. There is a rule in the Beis HaMikdash that works as follows. Any item that is used like oil, flour, wine, an animal that has been slaughtered, the meat, the blood of the animal, any of these sorts of items, if they are left overnight in the Beis HaMikdash, they get the status of lina. Lina literally means sleeping overnight. They get the status of lina. Lina makes the item known. What's the word?
Puzzle?
Yeah, it makes it puzzle. It makes it, not impure. It makes it no good. I don't know what it is. Huh? Invalid. Okay, it makes it no good. It makes it invalid. For example, there's some wine, which we're going to see later, is poured on the Mizbeach, is poured on the altar daily. If the wine is left in a cup overnight, that wine is now invalid. It cannot be used anymore for the Beis HaMikdash. There's different things you do with things that become invalid, but you can't use it for the Mizbeach anymore. You can't use it for the Beis HaMikdash anymore. This basin had to have enough water in it to service all the Kohanim who were going to work. That's a lot of water. It's a huge amount of water. I keep thinking, you know, at catered events where they have the washing stations and they have, you know, they have these things all filled with water for people to wash from. And then you see the people working have to constantly refill the water. I mean, they had to have a lot of water in this basin for the Kohanim to wash their hands and their feet. So they would fill up the water, fill up the basin with water. But then, at the end of the day, if the water is left in the basin overnight, it becomes lina, it becomes invalid. And then it would have to be poured out and refilled. So they had to have a system to preserve the water, that it should not have to be constantly refilled in that way. So the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah tells us, that there was a person named Ben Katin. That was his name, Ben Katin. Ben is not his first name. Not like as in Ben, like, you know. Ben means son of Katin. That was his name, Ben Katin. So Ben Katin was very handy, and he devised a pulley system that would allow the Kohanim to lower this basin, which is a large item, to lower it into the stream of water that flowed through the Beis HaMikdash. So it flowed through, I believe, north to south. I'm not 100% sure how it worked. It went north to south. I'll digress in a moment and tell you about this stream of water. But this stream of water went through the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash floor was made out of marble, and dug into the floor, there was a crevice along which this stream ran. So he devised this pulley system that allowed one Kohen to lower and raise this very heavy basin filled with water into the stream. The rule is that once the water in the basin is connected to flowing water, then it doesn't have a problem of lina. That prevents it from having the problem of being left overnight. So the previous night, before they shut the place up for the night, they lowered the basin into the stream. Now, this Kohen who is going to do the Trumas Hadeshen, the first thing he does is he comes to the basin and uses the pulley to get it up out of the stream and set it on the floor. And then he's ready to wash his hands from the basin. This stream, just as an aside, had a very important purpose in the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash can get very messy. What are they doing all day? They're slaughtering animals. There's blood. They have to skin the animal. They have to wash the innards of the animal. There's a lot of mess that's going on. Think about a slaughterhouse. Think about a kitchen. There's a lot going on over there in the Beis HaMikdash that creates a mess. Now you have a marble floor. Marble floor is nice. It's easy to clean if you have what to clean it with. So the way they would clean the floor is they would do, for those of you who have been to Eretz Yisrael, would do a fancy form of sponja, which is that they would block up the exit of this stream, causing the stream to overflow the ditch that it was running through, and it would just run over the floor. And then, after the floor was covered with water, they would then unplug the hole, and then the water would flow back out, taking with all the debris, and it would clean the floor. That was how they used this stream. So the Kohen now has gotten this pulley out of the ditch and put it on its place, and he now washes his hands and feet. The way they did it is right hand on right foot, turn on the water, wash right hand and right foot, switch left hand and left foot, and do left hand and left foot at the same time. That's the way they did it. So he's done that, and now he's ready to actually perform the service. He takes a shovel that was specially made for this, and he goes up the ramp. The ramp is to the south of the Mizbeach, the altar. He comes to the southern part, goes right up the ramp, goes over to where the ashes are, and he pushes aside the outer ashes because he wants to get ashes that are really well burned on the inside, and he pushes aside the top layers, and then he takes a good shovelful of ashes from the middle of where the fire was. He picks that up, And then he has to deposit them. Where does he deposit them? He deposits them to the east of the ramp. So let's, I'll pretend I'm doing it. So like our picture is over here. So I've shoveled the, I'm not a Kohen, so this is the only time I'm ever going to get to do this. So he's shoveled the ashes, turns around. Now he's facing the ramp. So he's got the shovel, he descends the ramp. He's going south now. But the place of deposited is to his left. He now turns to the east, turns again to the north, and now he is, the ramp is here next to him, and he's now on the east side of the ramp. And this is where he's going to deposit the shovel full of ashes. That's the mitzvah. He's performed the mitzvah. There was a miracle that took place at that spot. That spot did not only get the ashes of the Mizbeach, that spot also got the ashes of the menorah, which we haven't even discussed yet. The menorah burns every night. What happens? There are ashes every day. It has to be cleaned out. What happens to those ashes? Those ashes are deposited in the same place. And there's also, as this we may not get to, but bird offerings are different than animal offerings. There's three types of offerings you can bring. There's flower offerings, as we mentioned before, there's animal offerings, and there's bird offerings. Birds have a unique aspect about them that does not apply to animals, and certainly not to flower. And that is that the innards of the bird, the stomach and digestive tract of the bird, are not burned on the altar. They are rejected. The reason why they're rejected, as the Gemara explains, is because animals only eat what you feed them. You take your animal to a field and it grazes, and we hope that it's your field and you're not stealing. But birds take whatever they can. They land and they take. Therefore, birds are taking from other people's fields. Now, it's not the bird's fault. That's the way Hashem made them. However, the message that the Torah is sending us is that theft has to be avoided no matter what. And therefore, the stomach part of the bird cannot be accepted by the altar. That has to be disposed of and not burned on the altar, because the food the bird eats is stolen food. So what happens to the stomach of the bird? It is also deposited in the same place. A miracle happened in that area over there, to the east of the ramp, and that is that the stomach of the birds that were offered and the ashes of the menorah, the way it says is they were absorbed there. They sunk into the ground and were absorbed there. That was a daily miracle in the Beis HaMikdash. These ashes of the Mizbeach, there is a debate whether the same miracle happened or not, whether they also were absorbed in the same place or they just sat there, in which case, of course, they have to be cleaned out at some point. But the other two things, certainly this miracle happened, that they got absorbed. And if you think about it, that's a pretty significant miracle, because you're not even dealing with dirt, you're dealing with marble. And they would just be absorbed over there, and that's where they disappeared. So he's performed that mitzvah. When he performs that mitzvah, he then signals, I just forgot how the signal was done. No, they saw him. Since he's on the east side of the Mizbeach, he's over here. Remember, everybody else is in this chamber over here. So they can see that he's done. As soon as he's finished that part of the service, then the other Kohanim spring into action. Now we're in full force. Everybody's got work to do. What's the first thing they have to do? The first thing they have to do is tend to the top of the altar. Because the fire that had been used to burn all the limbs and fats of the offerings the day before has to be rekindled, and it has to be tended to. Now let me here stop and talk a little bit about what is burned in the Beis HaMikdash. I keep talking about burning things on top of the altar. What's burned? How does that work? Let's take an animal sacrifice, because that's the most common sacrifice. Animals could either be cows, sheep, or goats. Those are the three types of animals that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash. These animals are large, especially cows. They're very large. Every time I go to a petting zoo or to a children's zoo, I always think about the Beis HaMikdash. I think about these animals are gigantic. They're much bigger than I think about when I see them in pictures. Or, you know, these are large animals. Even sheep and goats, they're not small. So these animals are the ones that are offered in the Beis HaMikdash. When an animal is offered, it has to be slaughtered. Now it's slaughtered, so it's dead. Like any other slaughterhouse, which happens all the time today, when kosher meat is made, how do they do it? They slaughter the animal. Once it's slaughtered, so then different things happen to different parts of the animal. And it depends on the type of sacrifice that it is. Some sacrifices, a carbon ola, that type of sacrifice, gets completely burned. None of it is consumed. Not by Kohanim, and not by non-Kohanim. The entire animal is burned on the altar. What do? After slaughtering it, they catch the blood. The blood has its own service, which we're going to talk about presently. The rest of the animal is skinned. The skin, the hide, is given to the Kohanim. They can use the hide to make clothing, whatever, they can use the hide for themselves. The rest of the animal is cut up into specific parts, brought to the top of the altar, and burned on top of the altar. Other types of karbanos, other types of sacrifices, have parts that are burned, parts that are eaten by the Kohanim, and sometimes parts that are eaten by the person offering the karban. The parts that are always burned are the different types of fats that are not kosher. Even today, there are certain fats of an animal, a kosher animal, that is slaughtered properly, there's still certain parts we're not allowed to eat that are not kosher. We're all familiar, of course, with the gid hanasha, with the sciatic nerve, which we're not allowed to eat. Even a kosher animal that is sacrificed appropriately, you can't eat that part of the animal, which is why in the United States, the hindquarters of the animal are not eaten. That's a little bit more complicated. That's not because we can't eat the hindquarters. We can eat the hindquarters as long as we don't eat the sciatic nerve or the area around it. But the problem is in the United States that it's all about marketing and it's all about finances and where the money goes. There has to be enough, if you're going to start cutting up the hindquarters of the animal and keeping only certain parts and discarding other parts, that is not as lucrative as taking the hindquarters of the animal and just selling it to a non-kosher meat market. That's a lot more lucrative. So in the United States, there is no market for the hindquarters. There's not enough of us to make it a lucrative market. If you go to Israel, you can get kosher hindquarters of the animal, of course without the sciatic nerve. In fact, most kosher slaughterhouses are attached to a non-kosher slaughterhouse, meaning that they have some arrangement made. Because what happens, you have this animal that's worth $1,000, and you slaughter it, and then you realize you made a mistake. Oops, you slaughtered it wrong. The shochet, you know, people make mistakes. The one time that I visited a slaughterhouse, I watched him slaughter, I saw that day, I probably saw 50 or 60 animals slaughtered that morning, and two were no good. So what happens to those two? So if you have no arrangement with a non-kosher meat packing place, then you've lost a few thousand dollars. But if you have an arrangement, so if it's no good, fine. So then they take it and they pay you for, you know, they pay you the going rate of non-kosher meat. So that's what happens with hindquarters today of the animal, and that's why we don't have it in the United States to have. So there are certain parts of a kosher animal that is slaughtered appropriately, which is still not kosher. Those parts are burned on top of the altar no matter what. Then there are certain parts that are given to the Kohanim no matter what. And then there are certain parts that, depending on the type of sacrifice, might be consumed by the person who offers the karban. Bear in mind, you don't have much time to eat it. Karbanos can only be eaten either, some karbanos you bring it during the day. Some karbanos you get that day, that night, and the next day. Most karbanos you get that day and that night, and that's it. So that's a lot of fleishiks. You gotta have a lot of meat. So very often when you offered a karban that you needed to eat, you would invite friends, family members to come with you, because who's going to eat all that meat? And if you leave it over, then it becomes invalid and it has to be burned. So you have to try to finish it. So you bring along people to eat it with you, to eat the meat along with you. The Kohanim are constantly eating meat, those who are on duty. They're eating meat all the time, which it's good meat, but it's a heavy meal to have all the time, breakfast, lunch, and supper. They're eating meat, and they're also eating the matzah, the flour offerings that are brought. That's what the Kohanim are eating. As I mentioned last week, there was a Kohen who was on duty regularly, who doubled as a doctor, and he specialized in what's that?
Digestive,
right? Gastro, whatever the right. Yeah, that was his specialty, and that was because the Kohanim were eating meat, flour, oil. I mean, that's what they were eating, matzah, oil. This is what they were eating all the time, and they were walking around on marble floors with cold feet. Barefoot feet. So it was not an easy job to do. The fact that they only worked 1 week every 24, of course, mitigated the problem. So it wasn't that, you know, if you're doing it all year round, that's really going to be a problem. So they, but that's what the Kohanim did. So that's what happened to the Karbanos. Now, the top of the altar, therefore, which was used to burn the parts of the animals that weren't eaten, so there was always, all day long, there's this fire, and a lot of parts of the animals are being burned regularly. So the Kohanim now have to tend to it. In the morning, before the day's work gets started, they've got to tend to the top of the altar. By the way, one of the constant miracles in the Beis HaMikdash was that there were no flies, no bugs, no maggots. It wasn't buggy. If you go to a slaughterhouse, slaughterhouses are always freezing. They're cold. And they're indoors. That's because if they don't keep it that way, it's going to get buggy and maggoty, and it's not going to be a pleasant thing at all. And smelly, right. The Beis HaMikdash was an open air, dependent on the season, middle of the summer, it's boiling hot outside. I mean, this is all open air. It's not covered at all. There were never any flies, any maggots, any bugs, even though you would expect to have that. Because you've got blood, you've got animals, you've got slaughtering, you've got burning, you got all kinds of stuff going on over there. But it was not buggy. That was one of the miracles, constant miracles, of the Beis HaMikdash. So they now go to the top of the altar, and they need to do two things. They need to, first of all, rearrange the whole fire area to build a new fire. The fire of this, the main fire is out. Remember, you have the smaller fire, which is burning constantly, but the main fire is out. So they have to build a new bonfire. They got to put some twigs to relight it. They got to get big logs and put them on the main fire to start a new fire. So they got to build a new fire. So they got to rearrange the fire area to start a new fire. The second thing they have to do is they have to inspect and see if any of the limbs and fats that were supposed to be burned, if they didn't get burned. Because, you know, they're sitting there all day and think that if you shovel through, you might find large pieces that didn't actually get burned. So they have to be put back on the fire after the fire is rekindled to make sure they're burned. So they come up there, all the Kohanim who are ready to work, they come up with shovels and rakes, and they start moving around the area of the ashes and the fire. They find limbs that are whole, that need to be burned. They move them aside. They get everything set up over there. If the ashes are really, really high, then they remove them from the Beis HaMikdash. Just take them out to make room, and they bring in new logs, they bring in new twigs to rekindle the fire, they light it again, and they take all the limbs that didn't burn and put them back on the fire. The Beis HaMikdash maintained constantly a storehouse of firewood. As you would imagine, they need a large amount of firewood. It was this large chamber over here. This is a very large chamber. That's where they kept the firewood. Kohanim, who were unable to perform the service in the Beis HaMikdash because they themselves were invalid. Why would a Kohen be invalid? Not a death in the family. That was a good guess. Okay. If they had a mum, a blemish. A Kohen who has a blemish who has some kind of a wound or something like that that renders him invalid to do the service. So he can't do the regular service in the Beis HaMikdash, but then they were in charge of the wood because the wood had to be good wood. Wood was brought in regularly to the Beis HaMikdash. It had to be checked to make sure it was solid, it wasn't wormy, it was and it was good for burning. So that was the job of the Kohanim who couldn't do the actual service. That was their job. So they took these new logs and they put it on the fire, or put it on the fire area, and rekindle the fire, and then put those limbs back onto the put it back onto the new fire to burn. And now they come down the ramp, and now they go to, I'll get to your question in a moment, they come to the Lishkas HaGazis. We're going to end with a short description of the Lishkas HaGazis, and next week, Mirtz Hashem, we're going to start from what happens at the Lishkas HaGazis. The day hasn't yet started. It's not dawn yet. We're still not dawn. When I was growing up, they used to have a commercial for the U.S. Army that their slogan was, "We do more before 6 a.m. than most people do all day." So I always think of the Beis HaMikdash. They're doing all of it. It hasn't yet started yet, and now they're going to come to the Lishkas HaGazis. The Lishkas HaGazis is located on this picture. It's hard to see because of the stickers that are on it. The Lishkas HaGazis is this oblong shape here on the northern wall. This oblong shape, where my finger is, the letter would be Chaf Zion. That's the Lishkas HaGazis. The Lishkas HaGazis was the place where the Sanhedrin, or the High Court, sat. The High Court of Israel, comprised of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of the day, the greatest sages of the day, they sat there. There were 71 sages who were actually members of the court, and then there were three rows of sages who were interns. Now, when I say interns, the sages themselves were the greatest sages of the generation, the 71 of them. So they must have been, let's say, in their 60s or 70s. So the interns are talking about people in their 50s. Right? They moved up. This is like the next step before getting into the actual Sanhedrin. So that's where they sat to judge. The Kohanim now would come to the Lishkas HaGazis, and in the Lishkas HaGazis is where they're going to do the next three lotteries. The Lishkas HaGazis is located just outside of the sanctified area. It has to be, because the Sanhedrin, the courts, when they judge, are required to sit. A Beis Din, a court of law, in Jewish law, has to sit. They can't stand. In the Beis HaMikdash, in the sanctified area, you're not allowed to sit. You have to stand. So the Lishkas HaGazis was located outside, just outside of the sanctified area. That's where all the Kohanim are going now for the next three lotteries. So next time we're going to begin with these three lotteries that are taking place in the Lishkas HaGazis.